real. I'd like to call to order the October 16th, 2025 Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee meeting. Pursuant to Code of Virginia, Section 2.2-3708.3, and in accordance with the Board of Supervisors' policies and procedures on advisory boards, commissions, and committees dated October 6, 2022, and the May 16, 2023 PRC bylaws, Dave Bryant is participating in a meeting from a remote location in Reston, Virginia, and Matt Leslie is participating from a remote location in Round Hill, Virginia, that is not open to the public. They cannot attend due to personal matters. They made their request within the time frame required by the policy, and the county attorney has determined that they meet the qualifications to participate remotely. As required by law, a physical form of the PRC is present in the large conference room at 801 Sickland Road, and PRC has made arrangements for their voices to be heard by all persons in the large conference room. Record shall reflect the members participating remotely, the reason, and the location. Record shall also reflect that we are members of one or more affected groups, and our respective declarations of interest are kept on file in the minutes of the Facility Standards Manual Public Review Committee. We are open for business. You have no public comment. I think the first item is to go over the minutes from our last meeting on October 2nd, and I understand there were a few suggested edits that were sent in. I'll let you go over that, Will.
Okay, so we did receive some edits from members. One edit I just made was to call us the FSM PRC. This is an official acronym change from county administration. So we are no longer just the PRC, we're the FSM PRC, and it might take me years for representing, but I'm officially putting it in the minutes. So hopefully it'll stick. So that was one of the changes. Another change was here under the DOAM update. It got a little confusing because we have a chair, the commission has a chair, and the recommendation was to say that the commission asked the FSM PRC chair about the deliberations on the DOAM, and he reported that there was a healthy discussion. So that's just a clarifying change to figure out which chair was talking. Again, you see I slipped in FSM PRC meeting minutes. And then as I go down here, this edit was just to state that the floodway guidance was actually distributed to the committee prior to the meeting, to clarify that. And then if I keep going, this bullet here, there were a couple statements made, and we put in numbers to say that there were two distinct things. A committee member noted that one, there is no designated floodway on the farm, and two, the FIS report states there are no designated floodways. And then it went on to say that, let me collapse this, this was kind of a big change, and FEMA indicated that all floodplain must be treated as a floodway. And so I put the staff liaison board at the FSM PRC on March 27, 2015 FEMA letter, provided as attachment to the July 18th, 2023 Board of Supervisors staff report following the meeting. Just to clarify that that's where we found that, rather than saying the no rise floodway guidance and floods. So that was just a clarification. And then I think I might be on this one. So that was the last one. Those are the changes to the minutes, unless anybody else has any changes. Thank you to everybody who sent it to me ahead of time, but if anybody has any, want to discuss you.
Approved as edited.
So move.
Second.
Take a list of moving in. Derek, second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? So you saw on our agenda, I guess there's two main items we're going to try to tackle today. We visit the floodplain amendments, and probably a very short presentation on the 10-year reserve fund. Hopefully more than that. Okay. All right.
Maybe you're working.
All right.
Maybe.
The thought on the floodway was staff was going to reflect back on the floodway, flood fringe, floodplain kind of narrative, allow maybe some interaction. I don't really want that to go, the interaction part of it, to take too much of our time, because we do at some point need to get back into the text. Doesn't mean that if we have questions while we're going through the text that we can't go back and discuss some of those things. But let's try not to, you know, make this a 45-minute debate back and forth, maybe 15, 20 minutes or so, and then let's go to the text. And like I said, if we have to go back and forth, I think we're happy to do that. But we'll try that on for size and see.
So we did send out a couple staff reports after the meeting, had quite a few attachments, including the one I just referenced in the minutes, to try to clarify how the county's floodplain is designated. And Maggie, I don't know if you can give us sort of just a recap of those details about the dates and when it was designated as, I think there's a 1985 date and a 2001 date.
In 1985, the FEMA flood insurance rate maps had floodways designated for certain reaches, and during the 2001 remapping, county staff indicated that they would treat the floodway or all of their major floodplain as floodway, so FEMA removed those areas of floodway, FEMA designated floodway, from our maps in 2001. And so since then, that is how we have regulated, under the assumption that all areas of major floodplain are considered floodway. There was a letter from FEMA in 2015 that reiterated this. And if we wanted to have floodways mapped back on, the county would have to fund that, or we would have to wait for FEMA to do a remapping, which would not be for at least 5 more years at this point, if not longer. They only go out 5 years on their scheduling. So I think that's sort of the broad strokes, a refresh of both the items and what we talked a little bit about last meeting.
What's the difference between floodway and floodplain again?
So floodplain is a cumulative term for the floodway and the flood fringe. But the floodway is the area that has to be left clear for the flood velocities that come through.
It's together they make up the floodplain.
Correct. Together they make up the floodplain.
And are there areas that like were taken off that would have been floodplain then, like when they took off those?
There were areas, yes. There were, with along in areas where there was floodway, there was also designated flood fringe. So you have the two pieces. Usually when you have a floodway map, you do have associated flood fringe in most cases.
When it took that off, is there no floodplain there now?
There is now. It's just all...
all floodplain.
Yep.
Okay.
So another way of saying it is... the floodway is a cumulative impact on a number of affected properties to determine obstruct the flood fringe by 100%. And this floodway aspect has to stay protected to not create a cumulative effect of more than 1 foot of rise on all affected properties. And so when you eliminate that, like when you don't do that obstruction analysis, you have no way of knowing what the fringe is from what this really sensitive area that you have to be careful to develop in. So this just kind of eliminated the need for this analysis, just said everything is now the flood way to avoid figuring out what the flood fringe is. So it's still the same line. It's just now we don't have that separation.
Is the floodplain line, isn't that the boundary of the flood fringe?
Yes.
On the outside.
Yes. So like originally the floodway was like here and the floodplain was here, and anything outside of that floodway is the fringe. But instead of having that obstruction analysis, now that floodway is outside.
That increased the sensitive area though.
So there's no calculation to know how sensitive it is, because we don't know. Like when you make it that big, it's basically saying nothing can affect, like any work done is going to have a cumulative effect of greater than one. But typically when you have that analysis in other areas, like you've got that line to show it's a 0.5 cumulative rise, it's a 0.2. It's not always exactly one, because you have to look at velocities.
Right.
So it's like a compromising analysis that looks at, like, you know, everybody's developmental rights in the fringe, so that you have to do less processing work to do work in the floodplain. So administratively, it's a lot easier if you just did work in the fringe, if you had a mapped floodway. But without that, the process administratively is significantly different.
Right. Maddie, could you, does that answer your question, Derek, about floodway versus floodplain?
Yeah.
So could you tie that into where the county's requirement for no rise came in, or how that, what that means to our projects and applications?
Sure. So for areas that are in the floodway, FEMA requires that projects have no rise to the base flood elevation unless in certain cases there is engineering analysis to go with that appropriate hydraulic and hydrologic analysis.
There's technically should not have any increase compared to the existing conditions. So if we have an effective model, you want to do a project, you got to come in and do an existing conditions, and you should show with your project that there's no increase compared to the existing conditions. It's not comparing the effective conditions at that point. So.
Right. So I guess, like, to clarify what that means, basically before 2001, the floodway couldn't cause a rise of more than zero, but the flood fringe portion could cause a rise of greater than one. And now, because we don't have a flood fringe designated, everything can't cause more than a 0.0 rise.
So I would actually have to check that, because, like, our zoning ordinance, like, that is technically correct for FEMA.
Yeah, in general.
But in terms of our zoning ordinance, I don't know if we even specified floodway versus flood fringe. So is a 73 zoning ordinance may have just said major floodplain, which is just all of it altogether. So for FEMA purposes, yes, what Megan said is correct. For county purposes, it may have been that I would have to confirm that, but just to clarify, it may have been a zero rise then as well too.
And now the process is, like, only special projects could ever have a rise, like, that would have to go under the CLOMAR process. It's a completely different process for those that, like, if you were not a special project, like a comprehensive plan, you could never have more than a 0.0 rise, because it doesn't serve a public interest to have that rise. So we are always forced to come up with a design that offsets the rise by some sort of cut or engineering extra capacity through a system, which then only triggers you guys needing an alteration and then approving it, doing the work, then as building the work, and then taking the as-built and submitting it as a CLOMAR to FEMA. So FEMA never gets a CLOMAR for something that is 0.0 increase. They only get a CLOMAR for an increase. And then also sometimes decreases if there's technical data to support that it went lower. I'm going to let other people ask questions before I get to my question.
You haven't had a question yet?
Not yet, no.
It has been helpful, though.
Yeah, I think that's the purpose of what we're talking, because these phrases and terms have been batted around, and I think each of us has a little different maybe experience and understanding. So it's important as we get into the text, a common baseline anyway, to talk.
I just want to clarify one thing because I find this confusing, that there is a rise allowed for certain uses in the zoning rights.
Right.
I just want to make sure that's perfectly clear.
That's not everything's no rise.
Yeah, but not everything's no rise.
An example being
CDP roads.
Yeah. CDP road.
Yeah.
Anybody have any other questions?
I do. Okay. So understanding we're a regulatory floodway, and we've confirmed that there is no FEMA designated floodway, because the FEMA floodway encroachment analysis isn't like they had it and now we don't have it. Do we have to be subject to 45, 65, CFR 65.7 floodway revisions, since it's a regulatory floodway? Because my only question is, if we are, how do we do that without the engineering floodway analysis that requires a hydraulic computer bottle?
So we do that now, right? We just have what you submit for the alteration is what we then provide FEMA with OMAR. So like we like are doing analysis within the realms of what's possible based on the information that we have.
I do want to correct you though that FEMA does not require a CLOMAR or the analysis, right? Like FEMA does recognize our floodplains as floodway, even though we don't have a model, we don't have an encroachment station, so encroachment model. They do recognize our floodplains as floodways. So when we submit it to FEMA, any change to the floodplain is considered a change to the floodway in their reviews.
Okay. Right? So what I meant was, is called a regulatory floodway by FEMA. FEMA says it's not a FEMA designated floodway. It's allowed in designated floodway, which is a regulatory floodway. But how does that work with the, like, I was trying to understand how it fit with 65.7 floodway revisions, or if we were under 65.6 when we provided improved data based off of topographic data. Because floodway revisions, like you can't send something in without a hydraulic computer model. So like if you have more accurate like cartographic data, that's not hydraulic computer model, and we're submitting it kind of more in line with 65C versus 65.7. Right, 65.6 versus 65.7. So I was trying to understand like when we are submitting these cartographic updates, like how have we been complying with 65.7 if it specifically says hydraulic computer model when it's just a cartograph? Like we have the right to submit a revised line based off of more accurate topo and just redraw it based off elevations. But 65.7 kind of doesn't really, it just specifically keeps talking about to revise the floodway, you need a hydraulic computer model. So that's where I thought maybe we were just under 65C for that. And that was really meant for like firm designated floodway revisions.
I don't know if we ever send a cartographic interpretation without a model. Maggie can talk to it, but if you are changing the floodplain, it should be based off of a modeling.
An existing model, right.
Existing, yeah.
So like a LOMAR.
Yeah.
So when you submit a LOMAR, there's an existing model and then you update the line, like if it's, I mean, typically in other areas, if you have a zone AE, there was a model at some point, and if the elevations are noted, you take those elevations, and if the topo line, you know, kind of jigs and jags a little bit, you can correct it and submit that as just a LOMAR without having to go and update the original computer model.
It would still be considered a revision to the floodway. Even if you don't change the computer model. You can say effective model didn't change, but the delineation changed.
Right.
It would be still considered a floodway revision.
So I think now this is relating to like the whole picture's fault. Because we, right now, right, we get the information from the engineers. I mean, you've submitted both studies and alterations to FEMA, so you know how that process works. It feels like we're looking at a regulation and being like, are we complying with this? And I'm worried that, like, we're going to start getting into, like, okay, I mean, like, right now there's no issue with what we submit to FEMA. Like, they've never come back and been like, your floodway, you need to do more now. Is happening.
So, historically, we haven't really had to submit it for these, like, minor changes that are not measurable on the firm. So, from my understanding, our last conversation was measurable changes, because it's a floodway, need to be remapped. And I was trying to get basic of understanding as to, like, okay, well, what else floodway wise do we have to comply with? And is that the section we're complying with, or is it because it's not a FEMA designated floodway, we're complying with another section of the CFR, which still follows all the rules? It's just understanding what CFR section we fall under helps me understand the bigger picture of when LOMARs are needed for incidental things. So, like, if we didn't have a floodway, for example, and we were in 1985, and we previously moved a line that wasn't a measurable distance on the firm, like, I don't know how Loudoun County had done it, but, like, how would have Loudoun County had handled it if it wasn't the floodway? Because, I mean, I'm familiar with how other areas handle it, so I'm just trying to get to understand how, like, what was it before we could change the boundary, and then, you know, understanding now what that means, or that it is a boundary, because the confusing part is we don't have that encroachment analysis. So that section in Chapter 13 only provides one example of how any tweak means you have to update your LOMAR with it, because 65.7 specifically says send in new hydraulic data. But, like, minor projects that don't have hydraulic changes, they don't really have that. So I'm like, trying to figure out, like, if this is a, like, no rise certifications usually are managed by the locality, or if this is a, okay, well, you know, is it Loudoun County's responsibility to just look at it and say it's good, or is it, like, FEMA's responsibility to look at it and say, okay, well, there's no measurable change, but we still are required to review it with these, like, minor things. And, like, what it was before, prior to this 2001 change. And if understanding what it was before kind of helps understanding how to implement it after 2001.
Does it really? I mean, how it was handled in 1985 or 2001, does it matter today?
Well, no, understanding if the process required a LOMAR for something that wasn't a measurable change, yeah, because if it did, it makes sense why we keep with that program. If it didn't, then my question is, the second question would be, okay, well, is this up to the locality to discern if it's a measurable change to update the maps, or if this is like a FEMA, is a responsibility of FEMA to have the maps updated for non-measurable changes? Because if they didn't care about it for floodplain, I'm trying to understand, like, that the ambiguous area where we don't have the encroachment analysis like 65.7 says. So what do we, where do we fit? Because it's, we're not, like, black and white in one area, because we're missing this encroachment analysis. We only have one example in the guidance document that talks about tweaking that line specifically for an encroachment analysis.
So are you asking more, help me out here, are you asking more what section of the CFR are we following? Like, forget the guidance. Which section of the CFR is requiring
both? I'm asking. So I'm trying to understand if it's a responsibility of FEMA for us to submit things without hydraulic models, like outlined in 65.7 for floodway revisions, or maybe I'm misunderstanding 65.7 and we're under 65.6 for like topographic tweaks that, since we don't have a hydraulic model for that floodway revision, because we don't have that encroachment analysis.
Here's what I'm wondering. Staff, correct me if I'm wrong. What I'm wondering is if we move forward, when we get to chapter five and we start talking through our process, we're going to hit on that. What requires what type of computations? When does it have to go to FEMA? Those are all the things we want to discuss. And I think that might make more sense than trying to pin down exactly what's required of us before we have this discussion. I think
understanding the process before we get into the specifics is kind of helpful, because it's like a big picture, like, here are the rules.
I mean, we can take that question back. I don't think we have a CFR in front of us ready to answer that at this minute. We can take that back and provide you feedback on.
Well, so generally, how did Lyon County implement for the non-measurable changes for just a floodplain prior to a floodway? Like, prior to us making it in the floodway, like, how historically have we been handling the non-measurable changes to the maps for?
So I think that concern is coming from the fact that all of a sudden we're hearing staff say we're going to have to start submitting any measurable change to FEMA, right? Like, that's a change. We're proposing a big change, and we're going to submit any measurable change to FEMA. And so you're trying to go back and compare and untangle that. But let's wait and let staff go through chapter five, because maybe you don't. Maybe you're trying to solve a problem that does not exist. I feel like we're digging, maybe you're too far ahead of the conversation. I think we got to go back, talk through what staff's thinking, what things would require submission to FEMA, what things would not require. Like, let's have that conversation. And then we can dig into, but why are you asking that?
But isn't that...
Show me in the CFR why you're asking that. We haven't gotten to the what we're asking.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I really like the updated text. Like, I don't want to, like, overlook the fact that, like, I like a lot of what we updated in the FSM. Like, a lot of that kind of helped answer a lot of questions. So I don't want to, like, the things that I'm poking at right now, like, I don't want that to overlook that. Like, I genuinely think that this has been great progress. So... Like, I'm to help understand the behind this, like, the motive behind some of these changes, like, that's where I'm kind of trying to play catch up.
But I think I would agree with Laura right now. I think you'll have that opportunity as we go through some of this text. I also go back to my introductory thing. We spent a half hour, and it is a bit of a chicken and egg, right? We could sit here and kind of rationalize and evaluate history and what if, and then go to the text and say, okay, remember what we said here? That's what the text ought to say. Or we could get into the text and say, wait a second, I don't understand the basis for that. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just give it a try.
Just the specifics, okay.
Yeah, and again, we can just ask, frequently, we can always come back to this for broader background kind of discussion. Okay.
I have a quick high-level question. We've spent a lot of time over the last year, 2 years, updating things to FSM because of the new zoning ordinance changes. Are these floodplain things, I feel like we're past things that have been changes because of the ordinance, and are these because of new FEMA guidance, the 2023 thing that came out? Is that...
The changes for the FSM, it's not just the 2023 guidance, but also just... We've kind of been working with this FSM for like 10 years, and it's just to improve upon the process.
So we've met the ordinance changes with overlay versus whatever.
Yeah.
So as a reminder of what I talked about at the last meeting, I think is that, remember when they did the zoning ordinance, they did not touch the floodplain section specifically because they knew that we were working on a CAV audit that was looking at our program and auditing it, and that we would have changes from that. So they wanted to be able to do basically an overhaul of the ordinance all at once. So just think that the zoning ordinance rewrite got pushed for floodplain specifically until this process. And then as part of this process, we made a recommendation to the board to take it out of chapter five to put it in chapter six. So that's kind of how all that happened. But it was supposed to be a comprehensive overview, an update of the zoning ordinance, and therefore the FSM in response to that. But then you know, based on the guidance that we found, we do need to make sure that those things are incorporated.
Gotcha.
So Glenn, just to clarify, this is not a FEMA cap. This was our internal cap. We hire a consultant to audit our own ordinance.
You're saying CAV?
Community Assistance Visit is what it stands for.
And that's when FEMA audits us. It's basically all the things FEMA looks for when they audit our program. And so we had a consultant do that work so we could see if we how consistent we were with the FEMA. So that we get, when we do get audited, we basically pass, right, by fixing the things.
These are not FEMA comments. This is not FEMA directed. This is,
yeah.
But that, I think that's a really good point, because I think I got lost in that. The whole concept that the floodplain part of the zoning ordinance was delayed. And so we knew it was coming. And so it kind of still is part of the zoning ordinance update. It's part two. Floodplains was separate.
Good. So do eight first, try to finish eight.
Yes. Let's see here. There are a lot. I mean, it's a lot of sections of eight. I don't know how much of it we really want to discuss or go into. I'm going to jump to first edit. So Brandon had a really good suggestion at the last meeting after going through many, many sections of chapter eight and reading the same text over and over and over again. He said, can we just put that in 8.101, say it one time, and then cross-reference the 8.101. So I made an attempt to do that. Originally, when we spoke, we said it should say heading would be floodplain boundary. And then I started reading it and working with staff, and I was like, well, floodplain boundary is really only one of the things. It's also approximate water course locations and names and easements. So it was more than floodplain boundary. So I generalized it to floodplain. This is a little different than floodplain note, which is another 8.101 requirement that's different. So we have floodplain note, and then we have floodplain. And I put it at the end because that's traditionally what we do, because people are used to getting their comments, staff issuing comments. So even though I should go up higher with floodplain note, when we come up with it, it lands at the end of the list. Floodplain is at the end of the list. So that is that. I didn't change any of the wording. I just moved it up here and titled it floodplain. And then I can give you an example sort of what this looks like in 8.102. In 8.102, if I scroll down to 8.26, 8.102 is preliminary plat, boundary test. Instead of all the text in green, it just says floodplain C8.101. And that's nicely located with source of floodplain note, C8.101. So that change is happening a bunch of times. If you want to look at them all, we can, or I can just...
You remind us what the sections are.
I can tell you which sections. We can do it that way. So it's, in fact, it might be easier if I look at the table of contents with you. And so we did it in 8.102. We also are doing it in 8.103, a 30 cross-references back. Then you skip 1 through 5, because they all reference 8.103. And 8.103.6, easement plats, creation and vacation, we have the cross-reference. And 8.103.7 and 8.103.8 also do the cross-reference, because they don't reference 8.103 proper. And then there's two other places. 8.111 is grading permits. And 8.114 is plot plans for residential zoning permit applications. Now, I know I skipped ahead. I didn't mention 8.106, 8.107. I'm surprised nobody like caught me, but maybe they did. But I want to show you something in those two sections real quick. So,
go back to the plat list.
A plat list. Okay.
So you said it's in everyone except, wait, which one does it apply to?
It's in these three. It's in 8.103 proper and then 6.6.7.
But you're saying 1.1 through 0.5.
Cross reference.
Refer back to 8.103. So essentially, what you're saying is every single plat.
Yes. Which is how it is today. Like, we didn't add. I mean, we did add to some of these. Like, I think maybe 6, 7, and 8. We had talked about adding. But it's kind of water under the bridge. I needed that. We had already agreed to put it there, and I was just cross referencing that.
Did we add to it though? Meaning, yes, floodplains. Yes, floodplains, but the additional things about
the water courses and the easement.
Yeah, did we add to it?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously easements has to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just that standard, that same language that we just made consistent throughout. So it's not special. Nothing gets like modified. It's that same language over and over again. That was the exercise of going through it to see, did we want to alter it specific to any individual section?
I don't think I understood my question. So yes, we've always had to show floodplains.
Like, not in all those, no. So I think maybe we should look at 103.6.7 and 8 because that's not the case. We haven't always had to look at those. Let me get to page 35 and I'll show you. I mean, some of this is like I said, previous discussion, but page 35, 103A23. So we had added it. Okay, so that's A103.6, which is easement plats, creation and vacation. We had previously added the text in green and agreed we want floodplains to be shown on those plats. We want source of floodplain note to be shown on those plats. And then now we just substituted the cross-reference because we moved all the green up. So yes, this was new. So I kind of did understand your question, but I was hoping you were past it. So yes, it's new there. And the same, I think, happens in some of these other sections, like A103.8, I have page numbers here. I'm trying to jump to it. Okay, so this one, 81038, just to remind everybody, is AR1, AR2 division plats. I skipped 7 in mine. Sorry, let me go back. That used to just say water courses and names, if any, and source of floodplain note, and like, let's say a floodplain easement.
So it looks like we have to go away now.
Probably could be deleted, right?
Yeah.
Wait, so what is the difference in this one?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
It's kind of like it essentially what's happening is 16 and 17 and 18 is getting confined to floodplains being 8.101.
That's in division plats.
Okay. So we can strike 17 because it's a 16.
And do we always have to pull floodplain easements for plats? Riches? Like, is
it's an easement, it's just got twice.
I skipped. Yeah, I mean, because I thought sometimes there's been times where we've floodplains and there's not easements on them.
Yes. So. Right. If it's not an easement, you don't have it.
Okay.
You might be asked to create
one. Oh, I think we've been asked to create
it. Yeah, you might be asked to create one, but yeah.
Like, I'm a technologist trying to find an easement that may never exist.
Yeah, right.
I skipped Denny's. I jumped from 68. 8103.7 is Denny's. And it was new. It was number 30, and it was the whole paragraph was new, as was the source of floodplain notes. So some of these are new, Brandon.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
But we kind of beat that up for a long time. And so
I did. And I just, that's why I went here to perk it up, because I got here we go again.
We did, but I didn't change the text. This is the previously agreed upon text. So. I know you're allowed to keep. I know you are. I was hoping we were.
What section is this? Denny's?
Yeah.
And we have to show jurisdictional. The jurisdictional boundaries is a new thing that we just added, or no?
Which thing?
I'm trying to figure out what's new because there's a lot of blue.
Basically, read what's scratched out, and that's what you have to do on a day.
30. Okay, so it's just 30. That you're.
Well, and then 31 is going to go away, Laura. Because
no, we keep it. Because that's the source of floodplain note.
I thought that was in the bigger head.
It's not.
No, so. Because this is 103.6. That's a reference 103.
And the AR plants, you cross off the space.
Yeah, but you had to back and fix AR.
I didn't cross that. I crossed east of that.
Well, I think you can back and crash across.
A103, which one? A103.6?
The AR.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure it out. It was, you're saying it was not dead eggs. You're saying it's 8.
Division plats.
Yeah, division.
Yeah, here.
Crossed out the wrong one.
Yeah.
I crossed out both of them by accident. I just did it.
Yeah.
Well, 18 is that 18? That's right. That 18.
18 is what I meant to cross out.
Yeah.
You're saying I over.
Yeah.
You're good.
Source is still.
Sorry. That was an error. I mean, I guess, yeah, that's the thing to look for is easement. The easement's in there. We don't need it separate. I can check the other signals, but. You can note on that. Yeah, it was the 038. Should we move on to 810? 106 is paged. So in this section, what was originally proposed is in the existing condition, the gray edit. To add and reforestation plans required by section 7305. I added the blue of this manual because every other one set up this manual. That's a big exciting change that I found out. And then B was the whole floodplain text, and that refers back to CA.
This is nice.
And then I made those same changes on in 8107 because we talked about that. And so in those are changes I made before.
We need bookmark or something.
Yeah, it's not working. Every time I write the page numbers now, make it in here, it doesn't work. That must be zoomed in or something. So that's 8106. That got struck. So we're not requiring it on the other plan sheets. We talked about that last time. All right, back to 8107 is A11. So I just did tree conservation and landscape plan. And reforestation plans required by section 7305. Again in B, PSA floodplain C8101.
Wait, we're in CPAP now. So
we're in cycling now. I'm sorry.
We did CPAP.
It should be the same as CPAP. Yeah, it should be exactly. It's a mirror.
Was that saying on the existing conditions we need to show the reforestation?
It's saying you would need to show the things below, including floodplain. We added and on reforestation plans. Because what they wanted to do at the last meeting is just strike the, in addition to having it in the existing conditions plan, we have the plan required on all other plan sheets.
Yep.
And the comment doesn't make sense. So the only one we wanted to add that SAP has to add was reforestation plans. Because they would like to see floodplain on reforestation plans. So what it does is it adds it here and it deletes it later.
Okay. I thought it was saying all that stuff needed to be shown in the existing conditions.
So just to understand the site plan and the CPAP stage, usually those go in tandem with an alteration because you can't propose an alteration without being done on a CPAP or a site plan or even a grading permit. So we don't show that, we can't get our floodplain alteration approved until, like, there's an order of events, right? Like one has to be approved before the other. Yeah, the alteration has to be approved before
it. Yes.
See that per se.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. So the I follow.
And then this was a minor change. I copied it from CPAP. It's where it basically just says existing improvements to be demolished or removed do not need to be shown grading and drainage. Phase two erosion set control, tree conservation landscape plan, and also we don't need that on reforestation plans. So we just carried that through. Again, this was the same as what we did in 106, but I made the changes.
I mean, I think you're catching all of it, so I think it looks good.
So I think that's everything. Eight. You're now complete. Eight is done. I feel like we need like a proclamation. I don't know if you all watch like, the voice. My team is full, right? My team is full.
And it's not like a balloon drop every time
we get confetti.
I mean, it's like the adult's room. Part of the remodel.
Yeah, you know how to work that in, but this is exciting. Ain't this done? So,
I lobbied for confetti cannons, but I had to fall back.
That can use the weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Balloons are harmless.
Yeah.
Okay.
updated.
So that gets us into what we really want to get to, right? Which is the five edits. If you're ready to go.
I think so. I'm just looking.
Okay, so in chapter five, I know I sent you a big chunk of text, but a lot of this we've already been through. So I'm really trying to jump all the way down to really 5.4.4.2, floodplain alterations, and some notes in the
margin. There's just one formatting error you had on 5.4.0.0.
5.400.
Yeah. Because as you restructured 5.442, the no rise, no impact moved to a different section. It's not this own section, right? Or maybe you're just kind of listing options.
Oh, this is supposed to say no rise certification. Is that right?
Yeah, but isn't that like under floodplain alteration type one now? So like, do you mention it there or?
Oh, delete it.
Well, right? I mean, I like keeping it because it's helpful, but I'm just.
But it's a type of type one.
Yeah, I think it's
something. So it maybe go under type one, like a 2A.
Yeah.
But there's no B. Maybe we should say included.
5A. 5A.
Oh, you're right. 5A. Including?
Yeah.
Maybe? Hang on. I don't think I've tracked it. I don't think that's very beneficial. Okay. Including no rise certification. The no rise, including no rise certifications, including
yeah.
No rise certifications. And she's saying just strike it here because it's not a separate type.
So that's no longer provided with the site plan. That's specifically an alteration type one.
But it should be only be a $500 thing, right?
I'm just clear. It's a separate application.
Correct. It's separate. Please be advised that we periodically look at our fees in building and developments. So. Okay.
Thank you, Megan, for mentioning that. 5.4.4.2. So this, I guess we need to say this. 5.4.4.1, declaration no effect of floodplains is deleted.
Why do we have to keep the numbers if it's done?
You mean the section?
Yeah.
It's just yeah. Tradition.
So at least I can keep up with your checklist easier.
If you were interested, then comment references would have to change.
I think it's more confusing because then you guys have to figure out the references will change. Okay.
We never but I can tell you when you guys say section 5.4, I don't know what this is. You look it up.
I don't
memorize the numbers.
But yeah, the plan for 5 years ago or something.
It's different. It used to be here, now it's gone. So we gotta find out where the new one is. Okay.
Okay. So then you can kind of see what happened. The declaration of no impact became the no rise certification. And I knew this was going to happen. I mean, I didn't include the hyphens.
Didn't you also have some other changes where you got there to floodplain study type one? Is it a GC?
No.
No. There wasn't?
I didn't touch it.
Did you?
What is
it?
You were only supposed to look at the blue.
Hi,
highlighted in green.
You go to 5.4.40 for a second. So the last sentence says variations required for 5.4.40. And it says 5.4.41, which is preserved as nothing.
I have to leave it.
Why would you know? Interesting.
Another cleanup.
Why would he delete it?
These don't have anymore.
I know, but that's just when it went against everything he said.
But there's something in it.
Want to bring something back? All right, that's fine.
And we'll update this.
I know, yes.
Okay.
And it's just to be fair, maybe we did change those and get no rise.
The 5411C did not change from last meeting. Like I thought that was new.
But no.
So like 1 and 2, that's not new information from last meeting.
What sites are you in?
Studies. Yeah, we were done with studies.
Yeah, we're done with
studies. We've been done with studies.
It's kind of hard to keep track of like
what
the latest newest one is.
That's why I try to put in my
in
email.
A color and focus on
something. That's like my little. That's what we change.
Eyes wonder.
You don't believe
me? I know. I said eyes wonder.
Yeah. Eyes wonder. I thought you said I wonder.
I wonder. Some people
you know, you'll see it when I retire. You'll see that Laura was the best liaison.
You are a really good liaison. So I know I'm one of the difficult people here, so I don't want that to get overlooked. You guys have all been really great. So me being picky has nothing to do with how great you guys are.
I get it's confusing because of the colors, and I didn't put this stuff in blue because it was a whole section. I switched on you. I said in 8, look at blue things. In 5, look at this one. I just switched it up.
Well, can you unhighlight things once you've moved on?
I need permission. I'm happy to do an unhighlighted draft. Clean, you know, like not clean thing, but you know what I mean. I'm believe me, I would be thrilled to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, when we get there, when we're ready.
Have no more questions.
Oh, incentive. If there are no more questions, you may get an unhighlighted draft. Okay, I see how you work. Okay. All right, so this basically says when a floodplain alteration is submitted. And I think we need to change this one now that I'm looking at it, because this says floodplain alteration submitted for development in the floodplain not eligible for NRI certification, but the NRI certification is a floodplain alteration.
Yeah.
So this is just a disconnect.
Just something that we have to clean. Just highlight that.
I don't even think we need this. I think we might be able to leave the whole first sentence. Unless we want to just say floodplain should be submitted for development within the floodplain period and shall be approved, possibly.
What?
So a NRI certification is now a type 1 alteration.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to say you don't need to submit a floodplain alteration if you're doing a NRI certification, right? Actually, that's a type 1. Floodplain alteration. So I'm trying to like just simplify this intro to say a floodplain alteration shall be submitted for development within the floodplain and shall be approved prior to approval of the associated CFAP or site plan.
So is this a loaded question? It's just to kind of ask why certain parts of the new NRI certification can't still be done under the declaration? So that was like the biggest change I saw from before it went to committee when we were doing those like working 3 PRC groups to now it's in committee. And that was like, now all of a sudden we have no declaration. What was the purpose behind that?
Because the declaration now incorporates all of those as well. And it was just confusing people. Like it's confusing now. People don't understand the difference, and there's not really a difference anymore. I mean, one required, like, it was just getting really complicated, and people were getting confused. People get confused all the time.
Right. I just, in terms of like paperwork, like, it's just more things you guys have to then manage versus it just being on the CPAP or the site plan.
So we would actually prefer to have separate documentation for all of that, because right now, like we've come into this issue we're talking about here in this committee, I couldn't tell you how many declarations of no impact we have. We have no way of tracking that.
Is that an item that FEMA, when they do their CAB, they ask to look at declarations or no rise certifications?
All of the permitted, like all the development in the major floodplain should have a zoning permit to go with it. But like, you have declarations going around and we have no way of tracking that.
Just a note on a...
Right, it's just a note on a plan somewhere. There's no, it's not documented anywhere that we can track. So that's part of it is by having it, it's more paperwork, but having it as a separate application allows us to be able to track all of that information.
I have a question for you. What if you do the no rise conversion? Does that require a time form with the fee?
Yeah.
Because we have the, you know, we have that carve out for the no-rise narrative.
It's still the form with narrative. It's just
less documentation. Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of what people submit now to us.
I'm trying to figure out how to put it up here or.
No. Okay. Yeah, it's still going to be
a. Still a type form. Okay.
So, like a channel going through the floodplain that we would have done declaration no impact before is going to be alteration now separate.
No rise certification,
potentially just a narrative. It's still a separate application and an additional fee.
Yeah, with no change to boundary.
Oh, hang on. Not there yet.
And then we're adding.
Tyler! Not yet!
Down to that paragraph yet.
We're not there yet!
What I think it's pride.
Well, he was asking a specific question. All it is in the narrative. I was like, well, administratively, there's two different processes if the boundary changes.
So what about loud water coming up, grading permit only applications, but sewer in the floodplain? Is that a type one with a narrative and a separate application in addition to the grading permit?
And it doesn't need a LOMAR, right? So
there's not a way to. I'll take the easement plat for example, right? That like an easement plat is part of the process of the site plan. Is there not a way to do that with this?
Kind of like special
in the terms of
don't special exceptions go in for every single special exception? It has like another number.
Yeah.
So like it's just one application with like three.
All the building permits are linked to zoning permits, which are linked to all the
grading. But you still make separate applications for those.
But like the...
We're doing that now, I guess, with easement plats, right? It's a separate submission, but it's still associated with plan.
The
easement
plat is and
then you see related applications like these and plats that you would see here in a little alteration. Right. That's the plan.
Well, so I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding how like the new special exception, like the recent special exceptions that I'm submitting have like its own number for every type of waiver I'm asking for, even though it's one application. So like I'm submitting it and I see it pop up a web load bond landmark, like I'm asking for three waivers. My one application and it's got like a number to each one. Is that something like we can do here where you submit your CPAP or site plan, have your no rise certification just in that plan, but then it gets two numbers and your landmark?
Like just
an extra plan number on the cover sheet.
Ask Zeb, and Zeb said that could link. Like we had three floodplain type one alterations, but it linked to their associated CPAP.
So but it's still three applications. I think what Megan is asking for is that she just submits it as an attachment to that application and it gets an application number. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, like, and I don't, maybe I'm misunderstanding how the special exception is being submitted, but like, it's one document.
Not legislating a special exception.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they create a LEGI. And they just put everything under the LEGI in EPZ. So instead of linking it the way we do, they have a LEGI application and they process everything under or so they process any ZMAPs, ZCORs, specs, ZMODs, all under that one LEGI number. They don't give it all its own
They also have their own numbers.
And then
they do have their own numbers.
They all have their own numbers, but all when you go into any of those plans in Landmark, it refers you back to the levy for any information to do with it.
But is this no rise type one alteration? You can have, can you have that outside of a site plan?
Yes.
Okay. So that's part of the, so that's, I hear what you're saying, but I think the way that they set it up basically covers every situation, not just.
But you're, I want you to understand that this, the RISE
certification,
I want you to think about it in the context of people. What we do now is we provide an appropriate narrative on the plan and that's it. And then I'm hearing the comment of, well, we don't have a way to track that. So your answer was we got to make a submission. So now that turns into, for us, a brand new submission, new LDA, like you're just creating more work.
That was the only reason. I mean, that was the only reason. Part of it is now, based on the guidance, these no-rise certifications require computations to be submitted. And so it requires more staff time.
Always.
Staff review.
So it's not an idea.
Scientific data, not computations. Scientific data. So that doesn't mean
change.
Well, that we'll get to that. That's
well. So I mean, maybe that's something we can talk about the structure. You're right. Put a pin in it because it wasn't just for tracking. It was.
There's certain things that I think we're gonna get to a conversation where we're gonna like, I put in a utility line for the floodplain and I didn't change the land cover. And I shouldn't have to do anything to say I didn't change the floodplain. Put in a pipe and I snap exactly a pipe, right? I just different. So but I just want you guys to hear what we're saying about I shouldn't have to do a whole new application on a process that I haven't even like done anything. I would think we could get smarter in a way that we could break this out and find a way to have map or the floodplain team track this
with a Landmark.
Some kind of an assistance through Landmark, and without having to go through the whole gamut again of LDA,
a separate LDA, and then you could span multiple parcels for any of these utilities, and then you go to them like, "I gave you an easement. Now you're raising the floodplain." But see me sign this. Like, it's just so confusing.
It's back to putting something on a CPAP or a site in certain cases.
How hard is it to edit Landmark to tag and track that?
Apparently impossible on the technology task force.
No, it's not possible. So I'm very familiar with how Landmark is structured.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. Let us think about it and talk about it, but I think there are differences based on what I'm saying. If there's something associated with a site plan and CPAP or something on its own that needs this type one no rise certification. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
On your CPAP and site plans. But there are things that are
separate. Computations and you have to do an analysis. Okay, maybe that does justify a whole new application.
Well, I think there's some to be really careful about what analysis is meant for type one, because the type one is only $500. Like it's not supposed to be an exhaustive review. So
what's enforcement $500?
We are changing application, like the structure of these applications, which means we're gonna have to do a fee study. So this might not always be like you. To your point, we may be changing. Not necessarily. It might not be like a. Like, you know, the type two, it's a base fee.
$5,000 plus
whatever. Yeah. That could be what the type one, like the base fee could be like $100 depending on what it is. And then it changes based on other stuff.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying it's not, I guess, don't get caught on the
$5,000. So there could be a tears.
So is this not incorporated into chapter 8 yet? Like a list of requirements for the SnowRise certification? It's like floodplain study, list of items you have to submit, floodplain alteration list of items.
It's a floodplain
thing. This is a smaller list, right?
It's a floodplain alteration.
Use it more. Wow. So the FPL, I mean, it talks about the HDTAG hydro study.
Requirements are in chapter.
Oh, yeah.
Chapter.
But if it falls under the umbrella of alteration, it also has to be things in eight that are an alteration.
I mean, that was like we need another
section.
I didn't want to, I wanted to avoid, because it doesn't need to be everything that's like, I don't need a full plan set.
So you're saying we didn't say it, so it doesn't. Like, trying not to reference it.
Like, what is listed here is what I would expect to get, or what I think is what we need for these types of applications.
Okay, I have to do one. I mean,
we're not it to look nice, but like, I don't need the level of information that.
Matt, can you hear us?
8105 just says floodplain alteration.
Yes, I can.
That could get confusing too.
That is kind of confusing because with even the option one, type one and two, I talked to you guys and I've got clarity as to like what to show, but that's because I talked to you and you guys had said it's really just like two pages. Like it doesn't need to be the whole exhaustive list. So I don't know if that means adding something in chapter eight or pulling it out of type one alteration type one.
So we probably have to work on that because the intro paragraph says and shall include the information required in chapter eight of this manual.
Because that's covering all.
We're so close.
Balls are burned. Balloons are back into the ceiling.
Sorry.
<Okay. laughs>
Betsy's like. It's like
There were seven things on the side of the ceiling. I got it. I think it's easy. It's just type two is shown with chapter eight information.
Yeah.
Type one. Okay, so only type two required. I mean, I was having a hard time with some of the details shown in type one, like what that really meant. Difference between type one and type two, because it sounded very similar to a type two. And I was like, well, everything that's listed here, like that, the previous old examples of like the option one and option two, like without having that there, I know you were trying to open up more options for option.
That is one long sentence with a lot of ands.
Okay.
Well, it was just a little confusing as to like when you would have a type one and when you'd have a type two. Type two, like it starts as all other development within a floodplain shall require a type two floodplain alteration. Well, what is all the other development? Because there wasn't anything, there was no development listed really in type one anymore since we took out driveways and those other things. So I was just a little confusing.
I guess what I envision a type two being is that blue added language. It's development in the major and vertical plane that proposes
only rises.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to maybe drill down on for a second. So is anything that's a proposed development that has no rise, is it by default a type one no rise certification? Literally everything.
But they're saying you're upsetting the fee, so it's not a $500 application. So if it is like a complicated egress model,
well, you'll have how our... long it takes the county to do fee schedules, it could be $500 for
a couple of years is about right
to Phil's question.
I think the schedule for FY.
Are you guys starting to do anything? You might get ours.
Yeah.
Unless they're talking about me leaving. What about you guys?
Well, back to Phil's question.
Well, actually, we're going to try to get in as many as possible because it's so cheap.
Yeah.
Time out. Go back to Phil's question. Because I don't think you got an answer.
No, I think I did, which is that the answer is yes. So it's literally any proposed development that doesn't have a rise is now a no rise certification type one alteration.
Yeah. Which is like majority of all development in the floodplain. Right.
So except for roads.
Yeah. Basically. So every application now, except for CDP projects, will be a type one for $500.
Yeah. Okay. I do think we have in there that, like, even if you're, I don't know if we have it in here, but we might, like, if we need or we think additional information is needed, we can request it. But, like, for the most part, yes. Like, you might have to, like, your type ones might range in how much information we need because there are now going to be so many project types that would be encompassed in that. Not every project type is going to require the same amount of information to demonstrate no rise.
So that will end up being a comment you guys ask for, like, please provide more information.
Yeah. Versus it like being a checklist in Chapter 8.
And you would provide, and I guess I don't know, like,
yeah. It almost seems like you need to have a checklist for Chapter 8 for just Type 1 alteration versus Type 2. And just right when, like, if applicable, your HECRAS model. If applicable, you know, because like Type 2, it's all applicable all the time. But since Type 1 is now this big open thing.
So I will say that most, if not all, localities that use the NORISE certification have pretty standard levels of what's required with that certification.
Right.
Now, they don't have like the number of cross sections or how far apart those cross sections need to be, but usually it's some form of you have like, the existing, the correct, the effective, and the proposed. Like you show those three.
Duplicate.
Uh-huh. You have those four things, and then, you know, use your engineering analysis.
I also do want to understand, I thought maybe I misunderstood one of the old versions, but corrective effectives are just when you add a section or two to model the alteration, and those corrective effectives are still being lumped with the alteration. Like we're not having to do a separate floodplain study for a corrective effective in tandem with a proposed alteration.
Yeah, that is something I wanted to, like, that is something I'm aware of that is probably we're going to have to, like, talk about what that looks like because we're changing on how that goes.
Yeah, I read, my understanding of the process as it's laid out right now is that would be a floodplain stuff. Right.
I think it's now vague. I think originally the first time you read it, it sounded like it was, but now that you fixed it, it kind of goes back to the not requiring it because that was my first impression when you had one of the versions before. And I mean, it would be ideal, but like you could have a floodplain study done 10 years prior, never knowing that it had an alteration. And then all of a sudden, you just need to add two cross sections to the alteration. You can't do it because you're only adding it for a corrective effective. It's not like you're doing a whole bunch of remapping. And floodplain studies typically require, like, you didn't have revisions before, and you're saying minor revisions don't include cross sections. So, like, a thought would be, okay, well, you don't have a minor revision on floodplain study with cross sections added. So, you would just do those added corrective effective sections in your alteration study. This really should be only 2 to 3. Like, you can usually position your crossings within the boundings of other two cross sections.
Air is lost.
I'm in lost.
The conversation. I don't even know what section we're talking about. I'm going to be perfectly
honest.
What
you're saying?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. I'm not a crazy person.
I'm disclosing that I have no idea where that commentary is pointed towards.
It is a big picture question.
Okay.
From previous versions to the questions he's raising about bullet. So then Maggie says she wanted to talk to us about that in more detail.
Okay.
Laura, back to 5.4.2, just a logic thing for you. It does seem a little odd that you say the and she took out for Kevin. Type 2 applications shall include information. And then it says floodplain alterations are divided into type 1. It seems a little weird that you mentioned type 2 before you've had the sentence that says.
I saw that. And I don't know if we need to work on this because I just didn't know if we wanted to because I agree. And I think we should move it up here. But I guess I was trying to listen to the conversation because I was worried that why didn't it move?
Yeah, that's probably important.
Say it one more time.
I just clicked it and I was just trying, I'm just trying to literally move it right there. That's not giving me a base
up. But you can't move the last step.
It's slow. It's not moving as fast as me. Okay. So I agree with you, Elizabeth, that it should go there. But I'm sort of waiting to hear did they really mean that type 2 is only one. And then the chapter 8 reference is only going to be type 2. Because I feel like there might be some type 1 applications that might require it. So I was sort of, but I agree logically, it should say they're type 1 and type 2.
And this is
what. It may even come out of here. Maybe this goes below under type 2. You have to meet the requirements of 8. Like it may not fit here anymore. this whole requirements of 8, that might should go down lower. I think we got to get through the rest of it before we move down. Consider the age 16. Consider relocating to type 2 below if this only. That is in the same wavelength. And this is also, I don't know if this applies to type 1 anymore. We have this last sentence. The analysis shall demonstrate conformance with engineering and environmental criteria for floodplain operations. Shall extend upstream and downstream to a point with altered boundaries. I think that's all type 2 stuff.
No. It shall extend upstream and downstream to the point where the altered boundaries of the floodplain generally coincide. Like,
still need to do that.
You still need to do
that. That would still be part of like that.
Well, it allows more modeling.
It's just there is a criteria, the type 1 narrative, which doesn't require modeling.
Right.
So that doesn't work there anymore. My opinion, that belongs, like, I think.
That belongs down in.
Well, in type 2. I just think we should.
Well, the analysis doesn't necessarily mean modeling, right?
Maybe we have what section that is in.
That's what I was saying last time.
That's a dumb question. So the category with type 1 is anywhere from I'm putting in a utility line underground all the way up to I'm putting in a driveway corridor, driveway crossing with a full-blown analysis. That's all type 1 now.
With its easier ride.
And it's more than that. I could build a bridge.
Right. So why are we making a type 1 so
big,
broad? Do we have to? Would it make sense to?
I mean, I will say probably no matter what, we will probably ask for a full analysis for like bridges and crossings and things like that.
Yeah.
Like that's going to be one of those things where we're going to be like, I don't have to see this modeled out.
So why can't we spell it out?
Which is like that.
Yeah, but I think, Brandon, where Maggie's going with this is there'll be a lot less type 2 applications. You're going to save a lot of money. I think there's a method to the madness where this is to make it mostly we'll have type 1.
Take it to the other end of the spectrum. It's like something as simple as installing a utility gets into the same category as building a bridge that doesn't raise the floodplain. Like that makes
adoption.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying why isn't there a third?
No. Option 1 and option 2 is different than type 1, type 2. So type 1 had option 1 and 2. So that would be the third you're talking about.
It would just all be under the umbrella of type 1, but it would have simple things and complicated things.
Option 1 and option 2. I like that.
It could go back.
And then that way it makes your fee structure much easier because your option 1's your $500. And then option 2's are, you need a complicated thing.
Or analysis.
I mean, that's what it was before, basically.
Well, no. Option 2 was limited to just a hydraulic analysis of a culvert. That was it. It did not open the door for any
other. Oh, that's true, but it was analysis.
Just for private roads, private driveways. It did not allow it for any other road. So, if it was a small driveway, you could do it under a type 2 for $500. Now, if we're opening the door to this third option, type 2, type 1 would be your, cartographic change type. Sorry, option 1 would be your cartographic change. Option 2 would be your driveway crossing. Option 3 would be your big road projects. There's your zero rise.
The only thing is that there might be things that won't be type 1 or 2 that will just be shown on CMAPs and site plans. That's still a
class.
That was something that was requested earlier, like a sewer line with no impacts. I should just put a note, a narrative on my CMAP or site plan.
Right, that would be option 1. Oh, you're talking about the
debt. Yeah, I don't have to pay the $500 and do a whole application. Like, there's a lot. I don't think I'm putting that down right now.
No, the description you're talking about with side to CPAPs, that's still at option 1. That'd be the no, that was their narrative.
But they were saying they didn't want to pay a fee to do a separate application. It's something so simple. Something so simple. See, I listened to you. I don't think we can put all that down. I think we have to go through and then say, as we go, that should be just a note on my CFAP. That should be a type 1 option 1. That should be a type 2. I can look at that.
Well, I think originally they do want it as a separate category that they could track landmark. Having it as a declaration of no impact, procedurally, like how you guys would do that to tracking, I don't know. But right now there isn't a way to do it. So putting that as a separate line item, like a declaration of no impact, like that, I think that's a bigger question for how landmark is run versus.
Well, the type 1 could have no fee. That's, I guess, the type 1.
Sure
you do. I mean, type 1 option 1 could have no fee. A type 1 option 2 could have a fee.
It could be an administrative fee, and it could be not.
So what about, okay, so then option 2 would be things that are separate applications outside of site plans and CPAPs that are small and incidental that don't need the big.
Well, it depends. I don't care. I don't know if Brandon cares if he's doing, has to do a separate application as long as it's
just an application. One there, it's already kind of naturally evolved to that everything has to have an application now. Like the reference I gave on a easement plat for a site plan, you still do a separate application.
That's true.
So this could be like that, but one of the subrecord things that gets tagged to it. It's a subrecord application.
Yeah. Scott's got ideas about tackling that, but that's going to be down the road a bit.
I mean, yeah, you can. So anything like a modification for us, like a modification, a transfer, anything VSMP is considered a subrecord of VSMP permit.
Yeah,
and then we also have BMPs that we track. Those are considered subrecords too. So I'm thinking it through. We probably could do something like that where we could track it.
Yeah.
But we would either we'd have to figure out how we do that, like either have to apply for it or we would have to set it up in the back end on our side of it and attach it as a subrecord and just put the documentation there. So then it's attached to the site plan or the CPAP.
You'd have to also like subject your LDA form, right? To show it or no?
So this, I don't want to, this subrecord thing, my understanding, I talked with Eric Blankenship, and I guess the subrecord thing got released originally from the first rollout of Landmark and was not used the way it was intended. So you guys shut it down on our end. It's now open back up, but it's limited on what we can do. On what we can submit in those subrecords.
He would know. He's the man.
Okay.
I think for us, I think what they with our teammates and told our is that we should set it up for you.
I would love
and,
that.
Yeah, then they can link it and it's all there.
Every time there's obviously another piece to this of we've had those conversations with the PMs and they go, oh, you got to apply. And it's just go make a new application. So if you're going this route with the subrecord for the plugin, let's make sure that.
Yeah, there's a subrecord that there are subrecords that we can make that you can apply for. So like when somebody we have like a BMP, for example, people apply and fill out the information and it's a subrecord of the VESMP. So you can go in and do that.
Okay.
But we also have the ability to do all of it in the back office. So it's we can talk about what makes sense.
So I have a question that may have been answered already and I may have missed it. So can just clarify what's if it's a 0.0 to type 1 and if it's an improvement that's over 0.0 is a type 2, what's the benefit of that distinction? Like, I guess. What are we trying to track between those two types versus the type of development within the
problem?
It's a B,
right?
It's
a B. Oh,
well, no.
My thought would be what, like, where we permitted a rise. I would assume that would be my thought is I would want to track what projects created a rise. You know, did the in major floodplain, did they get the appropriate one more? Like, so it's that sort of thing, because they would just be different.
But what about if we submit something, it's a type 1, it's no rise, you have a comment, and it ends up being a rise? What then?
It's not permitted. I mean, if it is a use that is allowed to have a rise,
right,
then it would go into a type 2, get what we need for that, and then that it would just become a type 2 application.
How do you kick it to the type 2 is, I guess, this question.
like.
And maybe there's only a few applications and a few instances where that may occur. You can kind of deal that case by case.
We need to figure out how that would work in Landmark.
I mean, because I wrote it down already.
Yeah.
And we do that now. So we've had a couple of type ones that have been paid to type twos, and it's just not.
Sure, it happens. Yeah.
Making switches in Landmark.
Yeah, I think we have the ability to change the work class.
Yeah.
And we would just probably reimburse the old fee and then charge me the new fee.
And I took it. Sorry, go ahead. I was just saying, so you see the benefit of distinguishing no rise and rise through that naming process.
Through the two, yeah. I guess I see the benefit of having two separate application types. Identify that, and ideally they would have different in Landmark, but that's not going to happen.
And there's also, because we're distinguishing in Chapter 8 type 1 versus type 2, if it gets kicked to a type 2, there's also more stuff needed on the planes. Well, sorry, so you're gonna have to go back and just CAD or whatever, but there is additional effort associated with CADing up the type 2 compared to the type.
Depending if it's option one.
If you have to make res analysis for both of them, is it really that much different?
I mean, it's just you said to follow that list in Chapter 8.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's like
I recall when it used to be an alteration type one, maybe it was just minor floodplain, but like when did you actually update web logis? Like, did you always update web logis for all alterations? It's like, weren't some situations where it's just like, no, it's the type one, whatever, like if we don't update the maps for that.
I can only speak to my experience. I always send any minor complaint to the mapping team to update it once it's been approved.
Right, but I recall doing stuff where I was delineating it on a type one, and it was like, you don't need to be delineating, so we don't update it on this. So, like, you don't recall which ones is anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, if there's a boundary change, it would go to mapping.
But just, if preference isn't on the map, we're going to put another study.
Yeah.
I could have sworn that we treat some. So I could have sworn there were some applications that were really. That didn't update the map. That's why I was just wondering.
I guess I would defer to you on that question. If you had a specific application that you're familiar with, we get a lot, so I can't.
Yeah, I have to go to me. So I do go through which one it was, but I remember at one point it was like, oh, this is such a little thing. Like it doesn't matter. We just, and I'm pretty sure it was a driveway crossing, and it fell into that type two category, and it was a no rise. So.
It was a type two
application. Sorry, option two, type one. And I can't remember if it was a minor or major. I'm pretty sure it was just minor. So if it was a minor, you didn't really stress about.
Sure. I guess what, how you might connect this for me? Like where this question, like how it's. Like,
so, know. Like.
With you have to be quick because we're past time.
Type one, type two alterations. With all the different details that we have to provide, type one provided significantly less, and it was trying to track it. Type one just had less requirements because you guys didn't update, you didn't need to update the maps with it, but maybe it was just specific to minor floodplains.
So you're wondering why we created type one originally?
No. I kind of lost my train of thought. It's not why we created the trench. It's just trying to understand the boundary with type one and like the different options that we're discussing, like when one is this is like really detailed versus one is just not as.
I think we're going to get into that. Type ones are all about boundary changes.
And
so we'll get into when you want to change your map, when you don't. That's that whole discussion about how significant the changes.
So I want to, can I recap a couple of things before we move on to the next thing. Sorry, I'm a recapper. Let's make sure I understand. So we're going to look at Chapter 8 in references to the floodplain alteration and what needs to be included there. I think that was the whole I think maybe we answered that by changing it to alteration too. we're going to look at if there's a way to track a no-rise certification on a CPAP or site plan without a separate application. That's what I heard, right? Okay. And then we are going to look at, I guess, creating more options under the type 1 category that where more information is required. Is that what I'm hearing? Option 1, option 2, option 3.
Levels of analysis.
Basically corresponds to levels of analysis. Okay.
Going back to your second item, when you talked about an application of CPAP for site plan, I mean, but incorporate grading permit, that is still.
Okay.
That'd be nice. Yeah. All right. Hopefully this has been a helpful discussion. I got lost at the end of it. I'm back. But we do have to kind of put a pin in this. We'll come back, refresh on those topics, and move on to our 10-year, oh my God, almost broke.
Yeah, and then the other thing that we are going to look at, sorry, I my notes, is that we're going to look at a floodplain study and when it's required for corrective effective.
Like in the no rise. In the type one assessment.
Yes,
yeah. When, if and when assessment.
Yes.
And if you have advice on that, if you do end up requiring it as far as like these go, if that could, if you do end up adding a requirement to have a floodplain study for it, if they're able to do it under a quick fee process as well, since it's just a quick thing. Because like in a real world application, it would be ideal to have both of them perfect, but I know other localities just have it as one thing. Like you add two for that crossing, it's just part of the alteration. So what your preference is, just whatever is smoothest.
All right. You are correct. Before we don't update the GIS with the type one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Type one is perfect. Just minor or also major?
All the type one, not update. Because they didn't require the engineer, they just sketch.
Right.
So that used to be okay.
There wasn't like the hydraulic computer technical data to.
They have to do some necessary hydraulic calculation, not run the model hydraulic, something like this. But if you volunteer provide, definitely it's okay, it's good. But we didn't request for that.
Yeah, because I don't think FEMA would accept any other model besides HEC-GRASS.
That's the FEMA thing. That is not a county thing. You have to understand. Yeah, we talk about all the FSM county regulations, not FEMA. So FEMA regulation, you have to contact with FEMA. And so there is a lot of things that FEMA is not same as county. We have a county by flood map, FEMA has FEMA flood map. That's different.
All right.
It's Zeb's time.
My favorite time.
At least it's not your birthday anymore, you know.
Yeah,
you don't have to work on your holiday.
Thanks. So we've got a rough, very rough template in place, not in place, to present, right, to show you kind of what we're thinking, what we think this letter could probably look like. We're still kicking around internally. We've got some input even from Bethy that we're going to get to. And then ultimately, we do have to go to county attorney and make sure that they're okay with what we're proposing. But the hope is to have something that you guys can take, applies to all the different scenarios, and you can use that to submit a board record plan or site plan, and that will fit the bill. So Laura's got that to pull up.
So the purpose of this session, and I didn't send it to you at the time, it's very short, brief, but the purpose of this session is to get input on what's missing from this, what should be added, what's unclear, that kind of thing. So just sort of a discussion. So this is a letter that will be attached to the director. And it opens just saying that's being provided in accordance with the reference section of the zoning ordinance that requires the reserve fund. And then it gets a little interesting here. There's different scenarios. So this first scenario, and you know, one of the thoughts is we might want to pull out the reference to the code section as a separate sentence because it's going to apply to many of the scenarios. But for now, the first scenario is sort of your new HOA, right? Brand new, like creating a subdivision. I'm going to have an HOA. And this one is as the developer of the subject property, and it's his first bracket. We will prepare a reserve study in accordance with Virginia code. What's the code? To determine the necessity and amount of reserves required to repair, replace, and restore improvements such as private roads for the subject development. Such reserve study will be provided to the HOA and accounted for in the name, the HOA, whatever that is, budget. To provide all private road maintenance and repairs. So that is your new HOA scenario. Then you could be annexed into an existing HOA. And so we have the second scenario starts with as a developer of the subject property. So you see who's signing this, right? The applicant, the developer. I neglected to mention that. But as the developer of the subject property, you could come down here. We have verified that the name HOA has so many dollars in reserves sufficient to fund all private road maintenance and repairs. So that's scenario two.
You want to see a specific dollar there, but not earlier? Why can't they just say that there's sufficient funds?
The first one is brand new. There's no sufficient funds. It's like, remember when this letter is being submitted? Is it site plan approval, okay. Record plat approval? So we're in Brandon's gap scenario. There's no HOA. There's no money.
We got that. Hey, sorry.
Yeah, we don't. I don't know if it's order of magnitude. You say we have funds in excess of, like, I don't know.
I think if you
know,
just
we need to add the state code to that second piece. That's because that's not in the first. It's in the first.
Yeah, one. I think you need to add that state code reference in pretty much all of them. You got it in the first one. So the second one is an if or. You're not going to get both of. The first one,
right.
You're not going to get both of them. You're going to get the first half of the paragraph or the second half of the paragraph, depending on if you're established or not.
So I think the choice just moves down here.
Do you want to go through the whole document and come back, or do you want to go through section by section?
Well, I probably should give you an overview. All four scenarios, right? So then the third scenario is a private road maintenance agreement. There's no HOA to reference. I'm just recording a PMRA. I don't have an HOA. So that says, as the developer of the subject property, we have recorded a private road maintenance agreement that identifies the responsibility of the lot owners to provide and fund all private road maintenance and repairs.
That agreement, I guess, we're waiting for.
Okay, sorry. And then the last one is a commercial one. This is the patent clause. of the subject commercial property, we will provide and fund all private road maintenance and repairs. No reserve study, no dollars, no HOA, no
deal. Except for I think there needs to be more detail in that one on what it means. You can't just, because the homeowner could think that maintenance of, not the commercial. The
number three.
That one. Sorry.
Yeah, this one.
Commercial, you all know what you're getting into.
Okay, so if we want to circle back to the beginning, and the first one, if we wanted to start with reference to the code, I can just move the bracket down.
I kind of like that. Well, the code's only going to apply to those first two options. It won't apply to three or four.
I don't know. I think four. So I have to reread the code sections, but I think there needs to be, even in the third and fourth option, some kind of reference to what they're agreeing they provided. And to just say, I agree I have to provide for maintenance, to me, doesn't really acknowledge that you have any idea what that means. And when you're signing 5,000 papers, you're just, so I think there needs to be, even on the commercial, some kind of reference that doesn't mean that I'm gonna, you know, do an overlay every 50 years and, not account for money in the account for curb failures or pavement failures.
Is anyone familiar with the state code?
Yes. I have it.
Yeah, just putting it up. But I don't remember if it just.
Well, that code just applies to the HRAs. That's not just the patients. You can't apply to commercial association, you can apply to.
So there has to be some other reference that we can find to what is reasonably accepted. And maybe we can refer to this in a different light to say, even though you're not obligated as an HOA to do the annual budget and reserve study, that there are components of this that identify how you do that study.
So you want us to take some of this language that they're going to identify the estimated cost and collect funding or set aside funding.
If we know they're obligated to do that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I think we can do that.
You borrow the language, just keep the code number up.
Yeah. Right. That, thank you.
I got it. I know it. Yeah. Insert the defining language without reference into options three.
The HOAs established. In a sense, you're going to know the names of the HOA.
I just kind of assumed they would know because of the time of.
This is part of a record plot, yes.
Or state.
Yeah, you've got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, record plot.
Register is or whatever the
like. Because yeah, you'll have to have this.
You always have to have that.
You have to submit your declaration to the county attorney to report the plot. So yes.
Okay. And then.
So that's just thinking of something on test, if he says.
This is
going to be a site plan.
We need anything in this about. There's the language about
prior to
successors or whatever.
And assigns.
Yeah, the, I guess the first sentence in the first paragraph as a developer that's a proper change will prepare a reserve study. So it might not be the developer that prepares it, right? So if the developer's building finished lots for a HOA, like they.
I think there needs to be an acknowledgement so the developer can provide the signature on the letter, because I heard last time there was a real concern about whether the HOA. I think there needs to be some kind of an acknowledgement line and put in the language of the letter. I tried to send those comments, but we had system failure. That whomever the proper entity acknowledges that they're responsible to do that. It does, they don't have to sign the letter. Well, you have to initial it or something, but just that, not that, basically that they're acknowledging they have a role in this. It's
so
not,
in the first scenario,
it's not holding them accountable.
I was trying to think of a scenario where.
In the first scenario, there is no HOA. HOA is
well, the first scenario, you're right, there is no.
So if you're talking about the second one now, I think when they're annexing or adding, they're exchanging a lot of information. Rick and I were talking about this. They're regularly exchanging a lot of information. And so we, Angela and Rick are going through this. So and they, if this wouldn't be done in secret, like they would have access, because that was the question Zeb asked me, was how do they know how much that is in reserve?
I was thinking about the second piece, whether we actually even need it. Even if it gets annexed in, we're still doing a reserve study, and we could just eliminate that.
You're still going to show compliance with the code.
Yeah, like we just say you're doing the first one, you know, and maybe that makes it simpler.
You just say a reserve study will be prepared in accordance with, instead of we will prepare a reserve study.
Yeah, I was wondering if that's going to work.
And then to your point here, like it will be prepared, whether it's
whether
from the annex, HOA or the whatever entity that is.
I don't.
Do we want to put will be prepared and complied with? That's not the word I'm looking for, but and followed.
Well, in accordance with the code, I think it's like the code gives them all the requirements.
Yeah. There you go.
Every 5 years, and
so the question is, do we need scenario two?
Wait, hang on a second. Before we say, part of the repair, replacement, restore, improvements such as private roads. We got into this just for private roads. Now we're broadening it to all improvements and giving an example of such as private roads.
What's from your letter?
What is the code?
No, it's fine. I was just saying, because it improvements is defined in the code. I'm not that, I haven't been that worried about that because they define capital improvements.
Bunch of match for some zoning.
I was just saying, including private roads. It's just not only private roads. It applies to, I mean, the code applies to many things.
I know, but the zoning
does not.
Just say road improvements.
What you're trying to solve.
What does it say? What does it say above?
Just say road improvements. Private road improvements.
Well, say things such as, you can say, repair, replacement, restoration improvements, which include.
As well as
inclusive of.
I get what you're saying. This is trying to fix the zoning code, but the Virginia code.
Oh, it's called.
There's more than just rooms.
They're called capital components.
I was thinking.
And they're defined.
Instead of matching that, or will not match the zoning text above.
So does the county just care about the road section or everything under the road?
We care about what the zoning ordinance says.
It's just the road. Road section, the gravel, the asphalt, or is it the pipes?
Nobody knows. It's just this
drainage.
Care what the zoning ordinance says.
I mean, I guess the point is,
this is safe.
It's just a document goes to the next step.
Yeah, that would be part of the HOA for a private road. Would be something.
So the code says the board of directors shall. I mean, that's ultimately going to adopt the budget, right, Rick? Like, should it say the board of directors will of the HOA instead of?
I think that Betsy's saying she wants the developer to commit to doing something.
Well, they both.
Yeah.
Because I think they both have a role, and I think I heard, even though I wasn't able to make it last time, that there was a concern that the HOA might in some way not be willing to do that or.
So I think when
once
we sign
concerned about being held hostage.
The declaration, when it that gets recorded at record time, the board president has to sign on behalf of the HOA. So if they're signing the declaration, I would think that they could sign something, a letter like this. Acknowledging that they're going to, like, that's their job as and not the board, right? I mean, they have to sign
well,
it.
Well, it's going
to
be the president.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going
to be. Take walking down the hall to whomever.
No, but it
signed
has to
the
be
president.
Documented in the meeting, the organizational minutes or the, I don't know, the bylaws. Like, there, we have to pick, like, a president, VP,
right,
and secretary,
yeah,
like, to sign the documents before the report.
On behalf of the association.
Yeah.
But typically, it's the same people.
But still.
Yeah, but it's definitely, but they're the board members, yeah, right? So it'd be the same person that's signing the docs already. Saying, like, one more thing.
I
without
the applicant. Are you saying that should be different?
I think the code says the board of directors, so I would say the HOA board of directors.
Where that falls apart, Angela, is if we keep scenario two, because then you as a developer are saying, I have no control of this letter. I have to depend it on an HOA that's already existing to agree to this and sign this letter on my behalf so I can get my CPAP.
But they're signing the supplemental declaration to annex and that gets reported by the record.
Like you said, you're coordinating throughout this entire process with the HOA, so I'm not sure what the concern with asking the HOA and the developer to both participate in the submittal of this.
It depends on if we need scenario two. We don't need scenario two. Okay, could just say this will happen for a lull check. I acknowledge.
But why is it a problem even with scenario two? Like Angela was saying, if they're relying on an HOA to care for all those things for them, that HOA knows, even at site plan or plat recordation, that this is coming into their HOA. They're going to have to account for it. You've been having those conversations. You may, depending on how far along the HOA is in the development, even in later phases, you might still, as the developer, have primary control of
right.
The HOA.
We're not going to turn it over at day one. Yeah,
right.
Like they may not have it in their reserve study yet.
But they've
right,
been talking.
You're saying that's okay. Important. Both of them decide.
Or acknowledge.
I think Laura, you're afraid. You're concerned that they could take it as like a immediate commitment. And is there any way to just put that at the bottom? Like,
well, that's what I said. Just acknowledge.
Yeah.
Hey, the HOA could just.
To me, it's kind of silly because if we go with scenario one, I think we're dropping scenario two. I think. Then you're basically saying the developer who is the declarant and you want acknowledgement from the same person. It's Bob. Bob is the developer and Bob is the declarant.
Phase two, they're not the declarant.
Yeah.
Not in phase two, they're not the declarant of the HOA because they're
consistent. You mean in scenario two?
How are we getting
rid of
scenario?
We're striking scenario two.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the same.
How are we striking scenario two?
We're the declarant when we're creating it.
Right.
HOA,
but
we're not.
The proposal is to strike scenario two.
Why?
Because even when you're adding it,
I was thinking that the reason I'm saying that is I think to me this letter was just saying you as a developer are going to ensure that this happens.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of the letter. That you were just obligating the developer to go make sure that a reserve study gets done.
incorporate, maybe you just add the language and incorporate it into the HOA annual budget in accordance with.
It does say HOA, accounted for in the HOA.
Yeah, budget. Just that we're going to set this up to this reserve study and sort of make sure it happens basically as a developer. That was.
I think you sort of. I thought it was on as the developer, a reserve study will be prepared. Sort of. Switching the passive voice to very clear. So as a developer, we will ensure that a reserve study is prepared. We're not saying we'll do it, but we're
sure
we're committing to making sure it happens.
So remember that the whole point in this was to sort of reinterpret the language says, which really refers to kind of more of a seed money approach, to interpret it as something that if we're providing acknowledgement that these things, that can fit the bill. And so I don't see that scenario two goes away. That's one of the things we identified in going through that interpretation. You, Betsy, the HOA can just, if we soften it at the bottom, say acknowledgement from the HOA.
But that's only a sign of scenario two.
Yes.
Another problem with scenario two, if you're annexing it, and it's some ways down the line, you wouldn't necessarily have enough in the reserves to cover, even if the
that's HOA, a good point. HOA, you didn't think about that, did we?
That's why.
Then it's scenario one.
One.
Yeah.
Covers
yeah.
Two.
Yeah. That's why I think you don't put it when it needs
to. It's a brand new existing. Why didn't it
happen? Yeah.
Maybe it's just cleaner just after one. You're just saying that the developer will make sure a reserve study comes.
Right.
Yeah. So we're under discussion.
At that point, it's not really an established. I mean, it is, but it's not.
We've taken the monitoring for now. We're just saying that you, as a developer, will make sure that this happens.
And what HOA person is going to want to sign that and say, "Yeah, I'll use my reserves for your new section without you adding any money"? I wouldn't sign that.
Well,
I wouldn't even acknowledge that.
We're not asking them to do that. We're asking them to acknowledge that section of roadway, and specifically roadway, will be a part of their annual reserve study in future years. That's what we're asking them to acknowledge, not that they're going to do repairs while you're still the developer, but that's for the developer and the HOA who are communicating through all of this. It's not like we're going to an adjacent property owner and asking them to dedicate right-of-way for a project they don't want. They know that they're already going to be expected to do that. It's not a surprise.
It just seems like...
Did you hear the scenario Elizabeth brought up? I don't know if you heard
it. The point about the dollar amount. Suppose you have HOA, which has 50 houses already built, and they have reserves. Their reserve fund wouldn't be enough yet to cover the 100 houses... Private roads for 100 houses that haven't been built yet. That's why I said that second scenario falls apart, that has a dollar amount sufficient to fund all private.
So I don't think it falls apart. I think what you're saying is the language is altered to say will has a reserve fund that will be that will consider these improvements as they come online or whatever language that says it instead of they have enough dollars right now. Which is I didn't understand that was the concern. I think our intent is that they have an acknowledgement that as they go forward to do these reserve studies, they have to accommodate the additional property at the right time. However you feel best to word that.
I think the intent is they could tweak that language at any time, you know, for every project, just kind of
Right, this is a doesn't it, they can actually the state cover that already, the state statute, at least for they do, yes they do, because it says that, yeah, and it also says not just prepare but fund, yeah, which isn't even funding isn't even in yours, but it didn't say, well, if it indicates a need,
this is what Derek pointed out and I shared it with her, indicates a need to budget for reserves. If the reserve study indicates a need to budget for reserves, the association of budget shall include. And then it says the current amount of accumulated cash reserves set aside and the amount expected contribution. So there are some, there, and actually, and he counted that it changed like in the last 2 years or so to add some complexity to the funding. It's not full funding. It's not like thou shalt fund your reserve study, but it does imply it needs to be funded. So by referencing that, it's baked in. Yeah. Like, it's all baked in there.
That's the whole point, right? Like, we already, this is already happening. So it's,
would you forward the letter
yes.
format, and then if members have suggestions, send them to Laura, to staff, and
let's say wet by wet. Let's do a deadline, please.
11/6.
When's our next meeting?
11/2, right?
11/6. I think we should take the second piece and follow it into the first piece. Just say, like, you know, as a developer of the property, but the new HOA or an existing HOA, just reword it.
We could maybe get a suggestion on that, because I don't think that's a good place for striking that just yet.
It sounds like Betsy knows that, like, if there is an existing HOA, you would want them to sign as an acknowledgement on this.
Some kind of initials, that, you know, just something that they, you know, so that we know, they know, you told them.
What if they won't sign it?
Well, could we get the
if they won't sign it, then you haven't met the intent of the regulation.
We're not hearing
it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely meet the intent, and they don't understand or just want to use it as leverage to get something else through.
Typically, when we would.
Well, then you still haven't met the intent, because they're still going to hold it to get leverage from you.
When we annex, typically we have a much broader agreement. We're paying the HOA to annex into their community. So we would just include that you've got to, it's in there already that you have to sign the documents we get in the county. Nobody would.
But Betsy's point about what we want them to know, they know. What if instead of signing, it's a copy of this letter has been provided by certified mail to, so we know they got it. You've informed them, and you have to wait for them to acknowledge.
I have to think about that one.
Seems like more things to do.
I just have to think about that one. I can't.
Can we comment? When
you think about it, read through the state code, and where is that inadequate? What gaps are you trying to
close? Correct. That's why I have to think about the whole thing. You know, again, this is blindly finding a solution to a regulation that was written that none of us understand, which makes it really hard to know whether we are meeting the intent or not. And so back to your, does state code do that, and where are the gaps? That's part of what we have to continue. I think that's why we're all struggling so much with this, is we all have a slightly different interpretation of what we're trying to ensure is provided all the way back to the zoning ordinance until we can get it fixed. And we're just trying to do that as quickly and simply and difficult as possible. There's the word I was looking for.
This letter is correct.
Yeah. And so it's just what is involved in that letter, and you know, are we getting wrapped around an axle that isn't an issue or doesn't exist? Yeah. I mean, I really am struggling to understand any HOA that knows they're going to have to do this.
Right.
That isn't going to just acknowledge it. We're not even asking them to just acknowledge. We're just asking them to acknowledge that when this gets annexed, they have a responsibility.
Yeah, like when we get a bond, they sign a letter anyways. So when we get a bond and they accept it, you have to get the HOA letter. Like, they sign like six things along the way.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a surprise.
And again, in this one, if they still want to hold you hostage, I'm not saying the terms of them agreeing to do it. I'm just asking them to acknowledge that this is going to be a part of their HOA, and they accept their mission.
But the annexation is a small percentage of the pool, isn't it? I mean, it's really the property coming out of the ground. That's going to be 90% of the properties.
I think we're talking about if you phase it.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, if you are a later phase, more I'm thinking of that more than a whole new development coming into an annexation. I'm thinking if you get your approvals for private roads in phase one, the HOA has been created, they've done their reserve study for all the private roads and everything else in phase one, you're now coming forward with phase two. I don't know if that's the same thing as an annexation or if because it's all under the same HOA, it's just the next phase of development that they already knew, which is why I'm even further not sure. It's just saying, okay, we know this road, these roads are coming in now, they're private. And
it would be a separate document that annexes that section of the
HOA. Will it?
Yes, technically, yeah. Yes.
That I did not.
Will it submit the lots to and the open space to it? So not really annexation, but it's submitted lands.
It's
established already.
And it has a process.
Yeah.
It's not like a supplemental declaration gets signed or recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not automatic.
Yeah.
So there's 10 more lots, Will.
If this works for the Betsy, what we're going to need is I'll send this out tomorrow and we'll request comments by October 31st. Give staff some time to clean up this letter. They're like, maybe have a
I may not be able to get to it tomorrow morning. I have.
Wait, I was just going to send this up. Send this red line. It's rough.
Okay.
And say, add your comments.
Okay.
That's add text, whatever.
We're going to have a couple different versions, whatever we come up with.
Yeah, because legal, you're going to get to that, but legal is still
happening. Yeah,
okay.
And then we have to text.
But I'm fine with that.
Should we draft a tech memo?
So what I was thinking, and Zeb and I have had some conversations, that this is sort of a tech memo that just advises. It's not ever going to be a DOAM. We're not going to put anything in the FSM describing this because we hope it's very temporary. And it will just be a tech memo. It isn't really a tech memo, it's a notice that says, you know, when you have private roads, in order to comply with this section, please provide this standard format letter.
Yeah.
So we'll at least draft something up for that.
And it will basically say that. You know, here's the draft to meet this section of code.
Stay tuned for a permit.
Stay tuned for a permit.
When would you expect it? Prior to like signature set or?
Maybe, I guess. Yeah,
wouldn't be like,
I have to give it to us, but no later than signatures.
Yeah, but it just goes in the file, right? It's nothing to really.
Yeah, I mean, we sign like
you can't get it any time.
Yeah, we sign a sidewalk letter. We sign all these other letters that, same thing. Just when you submit like the first submission, just make sure it doesn't need to be in the first submission.
No, it wouldn't get kicked out because we're not going to make it a required document in landmark.
Good.
Homework assignment. I'm hoping for text.
So we wrap this thing next time.
Yeah.
Hope to wrap it next time and then go into county attorney review and then maybe go back, right? I mean, we don't.
You could guarantee Jason will have comments. It is 100% sure.
I haven't said it.
They may not be complicated, but he will have comments.
Yeah. Well, he reviews the HOA docs too.
Thank you, everyone.